Welcome to the Moms of Triathlon podcast. I'm Jen Gottschalk, a former college swimmer turned triathlete. I'm an in-house commercial attorney and mama to Maddox, my two-year-old son.
And I'm Amy Henderson, a Cat 1 cyclist with an elite triathlon background and mother of two to Oliver, who's 4.5, and Margo, who is 2.5. This week, we will be sharing a big life update. Okay, Jen, let's not bury the lead. We need to talk about the best news first.
I'm pregnant!
Yay! Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yay. I've been waiting to share this news. And I know, like, really the last time I addressed anything kind of in that, you know, topic area at all was when we were recording our episode about trying to conceive. And I think I had shared that, like, I could be pregnant right now, but I don't know. And, like, then I haven't said anything since.
Yeah, I just loved it. Like, that was so amazing, that period, because, you know, when you're trying to conceive, I mean, many of our listeners will relate. I related to, like, oh, this, it could have been this, and I'm hoping that this, and I feel like this. And, you know, you have that moment. And then, like, it's, you know, it's, I don't want to say 50-50, but right, it's just like, it's, you never really know until you
right
know.
Well, especially because, so, like, with PMS symptoms being so similar exactly. to early pregnancy symptoms, you're like sitting there analyzing everything. Like, you're like, are my breasts tender? But wait, do they get tender before I get my period? Like, you know, like, you're like analyzing everything.
I know. And I'm sure that it's not just me, but, like, a lot of our listeners who listening to that episode, we were all just like, I hope it's true. I hope she is. I hope that this is it. And It was also just so cool because we recorded that episode. I was, like, editing it and it came out the next day. And I think you found out, like, right before it came out. And I was just so happy for you and just like, oh my gosh, this is so nice that we have this, like, full circle moment. And, like, I don't know. Yeah. It felt like recording that episode was one of those, like, what's the ending going to be? Like, what's going to happen? And then, yeah, like, knowing it, just, I don't know. I felt personal. I'm sure you felt even more relief, but
yeah. I mean, I kind of just got chills, like, while you were saying all that, I felt so much relief. And it was fun because I found out, like, on Devin's birthday. So I knew that, like, for me, it's always hard to know, like, which day is a missed period because my cycle lengths aren't consistent. But for all intents and purposes, averaging them out, my missed day would have been, like, the day after Devin's birthday. And I'm like, okay, but if I'm pregnant, then it'll show up on a test, like, on his birthday. And that's so much more fun. So, like, I'm going to get up and test the morning of his birthday. And
did he know that you were going to test that morning?
No, he knew I'd be testing soon, I think, but I didn't say, like, hey, I'm going to test on your birthday.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, Maddox was awake, like, right after I'd peed. And so I went into his room, actually. I have a little picture of me, like, holding him to my chest, and I have, like, the pregnancy, the stick that's, and I did the digital, so it says pregnant or whatever. And, like, Devin was still asleep and I'm just sitting in there, like, holding my first baby, knowing, like, I get to go tell Devin in a minute, or, like, even maybe have Maddox, like, go, like, bring the stick into the bed where he's sleeping, which is kind of what we ended up doing. So yeah, it was just, like, a special little moment, but yeah, I'm very excited to, like, talk about all of it. And everything, which I know we're going to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So first, how far along are you?
Oh, right? Yeah. I'm 14 weeks. Yeah. Okay. My switchover day is Friday. So, like, 14 and a half weeks. Yeah.
Okay. I love it. So yeah,
I'm officially out,
you'll be 15.
Yes. Yeah. When it comes out, I'll be 15. You know, I'm officially in second trimester. So that just, like, feels good and everything. And yeah, we're going to talk about more of it as our main topic. And I, like, can't wait to share some of it, because it's been a journey, you know?
Yes.
So, but yeah, we'll, like, totally get into all of it.
Yes, we're going to get into it more. Okay, so, well, we paused that. What else has been going on? How's your week, how your 2 weeks been going?
Yeah, I know. I was, like, trying to think back, like, what's happened in the last couple of weeks? But overall, they've been good. Like, Maddox was sick a couple weekends ago, And we're, I don't know, I'm like nervous that we might have an asthma kit on our hands, which like I'm an asthma person, I'm asthmatic. It just sometimes when he gets these fevers or is like sick, his breathing is like not great and he's like wheezing. And I mean, I'm so lucky I have my sister who like specializes in all the PICU stuff, because I just like took Maddox's shirt off of him and was like sending her a picture, and she was like, oh, he's really belly breathing. Like, I don't like the way that looks. And he was wheezing and things like that. But she's like, you know, it's up to you. She's like, if you were to take him in, they'd definitely give him a breathing treatment. Like, he would definitely be given a nebulizer. But like, he's okay-ish, you know? And I hate that. I hate that balance of being like, oh, I don't want to take him in for pretty much nothing, but I'll feel so bad if I keep him home and he's suffering more than I realize. Cause it's hard with toddlers. Cause like he would be doing that and then he'd go jump on his trampoline and I'd be like, no, we're not doing that tonight. You know, like, and so it's like so hard sometimes to feel like, oh, well, are they suffering? Cause if he wants to go jump on his trampoline, then like how bad is his breathing? You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, that night we ended up not taking him in. We did choose to sleep with him. Part of that was like knowing I could send Whitney videos and she could let me know if it was progressing. Part of it was him seeming otherwise okay enough. And knowing that basically what my sister and I decided was his 2.5 year checkup is coming up. And so it was like, let's definitely have a conversation with the pediatrician about having a rescue inhaler and a spacer at home so that in the future, if he has a little fever and a cold and he's starting to wheeze and belly breathe, I can just like give him a little puff and like monitor from there, you know?
I think that's a really good idea. And, you know, we've dealt with similar stuff. I'm relating like way too much to everything you're saying.
Yeah.
But with Ollie, since he had, you know, been hospitalized with RSV when he was a baby, we got we went to see a pulmonologist and have an inhaler and stuff on hand. We have like, you know, two different types. And so then if he gets a cold, then we start it up to help, you know, if he gets a cold with a lot of like respiratory stuff, we start it up. And then of course now he's like 4.5 and he saw the pulmonologist when he was like less than one. And so, you know, once you're past your 3 years, if you haven't had an appointment, then you like fall out of their system and you need another referral. So that's one thing, is like just getting referrals early so that you have a connection with a specialist, and then potentially just, you know, making sure that you go every few years to like have a check-in. Yeah. Because then we got back into the pulmonologist and, you know, had him seen again. And they were like, you can be starting these, you know, earlier than you have been, like you can use them more. So it's like, okay, great. Like it feels sort of, for me, like sometimes I'm like, why are we going to this appointment? Do we need this? Do we need that? But it's like, sometimes it's just that maintenance. And then like, you know, also like reassurance, getting some more information. And like you say, like having something on hand. So I think that's probably a good idea.
Yeah. So like that appointment's next week. And, but because of that, and because he does seem to go like have the breathing issues with an illness, like last weekend, he was supposed to go to Chico with my mom to meet up with my dad, my brother, sister-in-law, and my nephew for the weekend. We were doing a kids-free weekend in Mammoth. And on Friday, when my mom got here to get Maddox, we got word that Jack had 105-degree fever. And I was like, yeah, he can't go be there this weekend, because if he gets sick again, I also don't want to put my parents in the position of analyzing his breathing, you know, and all that. And like, because with family, I mean, obviously in that case, we're like, yeah, we're not going to expose him to 105-degree fever. But like, if they had called and been like, hey, Jack's nose has been runny for a few days, I would have been like, it's fine. Everyone at daycare's nose is runny. Like, they can hang out, right? But with something like that, I was just like, especially knowing that we have that appointment coming up where I'm planning to talk about this, you know? And so it's just like, it's hard. It's hard with those medical decisions for like a little creature that can't fully tell you how they feel, you know? I remember having that same juxtaposition that you're just describing and I was describing when my sister was like, he needs to go to an ENT. I think he needs his adenoids out. And they were like, yes, right. He needs his adenoids out. But for like, until the surgeon literally came out and said, yeah, his were huge. I still was having those moments of like, oh my God, was it right to make my kid have surgery at 18 exactly. months old? You know? So yes. It's like, it's hard. It's hard as a mom. And Devin also is like, he grew up in a place that he didn't have medical care available the way that I did. And then he's always like, your family's so prone to just like go to the doctor. I'm like, well, my mom was a nurse and like we also had it available to us. You know what I mean? And we had good coverage my whole life. Yeah. And so sometimes it's like he just doesn't worry as much as me, or he wonders. And like with all the love, like he's not like Jen's yeah. crazy or Jen's a hypochondriac, but he just sometimes he pushes back a little more on like, do you need to go to the doctor? Does he need to go to the doctor? And then that makes it harder though for me, you know, which is oftentimes why I involve Whitney, because I'm like,
right.
Well, she
right.
sees the most critical patients. So if she is getting a video of Maddox and saying, if she said, go to the ER right now, I would have been like,
oh yeah,
we're going, you know, 100%. So
yeah but. And this is, you know, I know with so much of, I don't know why Nick and I's relationship is exactly the reverse of like, it's yeah. like the stereotypical, like, because it's like with you and with Allie, I'm always yeah. like, the husband
yeah
whatever. But Nick, same thing, comes from a medical family, like all of his parents are doctors, you know, step parents and parent whatever, and and so he's always the one pushing to go to the hospital. And I'm like, really? Do we have to? And so if he tells me to call, and I'm like, what am I even asking about? Like, why am I calling? Or like, why yeah. am I on this appointment? But yeah, I mean, it always, you know, I mean, it doesn't hurt. And I think that's the main thing. It doesn't hurt. And like, I need to just get over my like, oh, they think we're crazy, because yeah, when I get into my week, like we'll talk more about it. You'll see.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. And not to like belabor it, but I think, you know, just like parental instinct is a thing, especially yep. like mom instinct, because there was a time when Maddox was 3 months old, we were visiting Whitney in Minnesota and he was not himself that night. And Whitney was starting to get concerned and she was like, should you take him to an urgent care here? Like he was starting to get a fever. He was just like, we couldn't console him, like all of that. And I was just like, I don't think he's sick. I don't think he's sick. I don't think he's sick. And the next day was when he got his first tooth at 3 months, like it popped out overnight. And I'd been up most of the night with him. And it was like, you know, my instinct was he's not sick. He's not sick, but neither of us had yet had our own baby experiencing getting a tooth for the first time. Not to mention every kid is different with the teething right. process. So it was just like, I try to remind Devin of that too, of like, I don't always say, yep, we're going, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So it's like, cause that would have probably been a bigger, you know, out of state bill back when I was at Ironman with not as good a coverage as I have now, you know? So like,
I
think I have decent instincts, but I would rather err on the side of caution most of the time, but I think, yeah. So that went on, and I'm looking forward to having his appointment coming up so that we can just like talk to the doctor more about it. And just generally, I love the little well child checks. I love to be like, aww, how are they doing? How tall is he now? Like, how's he, you know, all the things, which is so silly because I hated them as a kid, like literally hated them.
So
but, I just think, I don't know, probably most parents relish in a doctor also being like, your kid is thriving. They're doing great. I'm like, thank you so much. But that's what I'm expecting. And then we just had a really busy schedule. We went from being at my parents' place in Somerset for a weekend, and I had one night back home to then get ready to be gone at Chegg all week. I was in Santa Clara last week. And then I literally like drove home Friday morning, had an hour here, and then headed to Mammoth with Devin, where we did a weekend with two other couples and no kids. So aww, I also didn't see Maddox for 6 whole days, which was definitely the longest I've gone so far. So that was kind of crazy. I'm pretty sure, I can't remember, I had one business trip with Ironman for 70.3 Worlds in St. George. That might have, it was either 5 or 6 days, but it was the longest time in a while. And
yeah,
so I really missed him. But my week at Chegg was like amazing. Just like, I love connecting with my coworkers in person. I'm very grateful to be remote, but I do love that time in person as well. And the No Kids Weekend in Mammoth, I definitely FaceTimed Maddox and my mom several times, but it was it was nice to just, you know, hang out with adults and connect in that way and stuff. So yeah.
That's so fun. That's awesome.
Yeah. But anyway, Amy, I know we've got a interesting update from you. I'm very curious to hear how things have been going and what all went on with you this last week.
Yeah. So as we, you know, again, very relevant to your update and honestly the whole conversation today, because pregnancy is a bunch of medical stuff too.
Yes.
But yeah, we have been dealing with a sick little Ollie this week. And yeah, oh man, it's hard to even like think of where we begin.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I want to know like how it even started, or like what was the first signs that he wasn't doing well?
Yeah, so like last week, Sunday night, he was itchy. Okay, he had itchy lower back and an itchy back of his neck, like bumps, super itchy. Was waking up. I went and I looked in the bathroom. I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, you have this big rash and you have all this itchy stuff. And the day before we'd been at the park and there were a bunch of mosquitoes, and Nick was like, maybe he got a bunch of mosquito bites. I was like, I really don't think that he was attacked by a mob of mosquitoes. Like, I think I would have noticed.
Yeah. So do they look like hive-like or?
Essentially. Yeah.
Okay.
Like
okay.
Essentially it was, yeah, pretty much hive-like. I mean, it was a rash. Like, as I've been reading about all this different medical stuff, it moved around very, very quickly. So like, weird. You can look at it 1 minute and then it's, which is sort of like hives, right? Like they come and they go very fast and they move. And so it was confusing. And so, but then the craziest thing was that, so Nick gave him, you know, an antihistamine Sunday night. Sunday afternoon, he woke up from a nap and he would not walk. He was complaining about pain in his feet. And so essentially he was having joint swelling and he was not willing to like put weight on his feet, and he was crying in pain. And so Nick took him to the ER.
Okay.
And at the ER, they diagnosed him thinking that it had two different potential things, but one of them was this thing called arrhythmia multiforme. And so until Thursday, when we saw a dermatology specialist in a different ER, you know, like 4 days later, we thought it was this one thing. And we ended up finding out that what it really was serum sickness like response, which basically he'd been on amoxicillin from an ear infection. And then it's often like sort of an amoxicillin type reaction, but it can also be if you have another virus. And so it like interacts, and just like the weird way your immune system works, you get this immune system response, and it's sort of like the allergic reaction. And it's this long-term thing. You can get the swelling of the joints, the itchy rash, face swelling. So basically, and it was just like the progression was so fast. So then first it was the joint pain and the rash, and then his lips swelled up, his eyes swelled up, like he looked like a different person, you know, just totally swollen. And he would not walk, would not feed himself, was crying out in pain. Like, you know, we could hear him just like whimpering when he was sleeping. Like, it was just like the worst thing ever. Like, it was crazy. And so we went to see our doctor Monday. And we just kept working with this diagnosis we had. Also, all week, he was, like, having a fever that was getting, like, worse and worse and worse, which is crazy, right? Like, you think, oh, you get the fever at the beginning, and then it gets better. And they kept telling us, we treat this just like comfort treatment. Like, you know, give the ibuprofen, and then you just wait it out.
At that point, is it the serum sickness-like reaction diagnosis, or was it that first diagnosis still that you were
basing
this off of?
Still thinking it was the arrhythmia multiforme.
Okay. Okay.
So that one, they were saying like, we just like, as long as he's like somewhat improving and able to like not be in pain, then with like ibuprofen, then we just treat it like that. So basically we don't do steroids.
Okay.
If he's like, okay. Eventually Thursday night, Nick was like, we're going back to the ER. And that's when we saw the specialist, the dermatology specialist, and they diagnosed it as serum sickness-like reaction. And they were like, we start steroids. So many days later, finally we started steroids. Did that. We got sent home, trying to figure out like, how are we going to get him to take these steroids? Because of course, he didn't want to take them as a liquid. So we had to do it as a shot. But we had a meeting, an appointment with our pediatrician the next day. And we were like, we will go in every day and just get shots. Like,
yeah,
because those are, you know, like working. And we were at our pediatrician's office. And he like started having this coughing attack. And his face started getting like, you know, hives all over it.
Oh, no.
And she was looking at him and there was like tugging at his throat, you know, where you could like see it going in.
Yeah.
And she was like, I think that this is like the start of like anaphylaxis or whatever. It's like an allergic reaction, whatever. She was like, I'm going to get my colleague. I think we need to give him an EpiPen.
Oh my gosh.
And literally they went. And yeah, so she got her colleague and her colleague was like, yep, we need to do this. And so they gave him an EpiPen and I'm sitting there just like trying to not let him see my face, crying, like,
yeah,
what is happening? Like, and that was one of those cases where I'm looking at him and like, cause we kept these coughing attacks sort of kept happening, but we thought that he had just like choked on some water. And I was always like, oh, you know, it lasts a little bit and then it goes away. And it was, and I don't know, like, the different level of the different ones, but this was one of those moments where I'm like, how in danger was he? Or that type of thing. And for me, I'm like, I would not have registered that as like, oh, wow, this is like an immediate danger. But I'm like, there are two doctors here who said, we need to administer epinephrine right now. And so then, you know, they have to call the ambulance. He had to be driven to the ER again with the ambulance. And then they had to administer epinephrine again because it happened again in the ER. And then he was admitted to the hospital for like 2 nights. And also like his swelling had gone down. Like
he
was actually like improving in a lot of ways, but his feet, I just like felt like, oh, are the people at the hospital? Cause like at that point he was so much better than where he'd been on Monday. So I was like, he's so much better. Is, like, does he need to, you know, be in the hospital, or do people think like that we're crazy parents for him being here? And I'm just like, you know what? Our pediatrician literally like saw this happening and called an ambulance. Like, which I'm sure he did really well. If they use an EpiPen, like you have to go to the hospital. So it's like, that's why we do it. But I'm just like, this is not me. Like, and then, you know, you can't just go home because if this happens again, like, of course, we can have an EpiPen. But like, if we don't know why this just happened and what's going on, like, we can't just be at home with a kid who like might go into anaphylactic shock and we don't know what's going on. Right.
Yeah. So has there been any conclusion on like what's been causing the reaction? Like what caused the serum sickness like reaction, like any of it? Do you know causes or anything?
So I think the cause really is like, it happens often, like, you know, and I've read like some of the research articles, like it happens like often 7 to 8 days after being on, like within an amoxicillin cycle, you know.
So is he gonna be so is he gonna be officially considered allergic then to amoxicillin?
We're going to talk with an allergist and figure it out. He will be listed, like it will be listed for now. And they're like, you know, there's so many, there's other like drugs that you can use. So like, why not avoid it? But it's sort of, it's not totally certain, but yes, like we will be avoiding it for now. But it's not the same as an allergy, because if you were to have an amoxicillin allergy, like you would take it and then immediately have a reaction. So it is a bit different. And it really, they really do think that it like is the way that it mixes with another virus that you have. And they even said like, it's not common that they see kids with this very much. Like they see a few a year at this. Okay. And of course there's a few hospitals in town and stuff. Right. But they did say it comes in waves. And at the same time Ollie had this, another kid had like the same thing. So it feels like there's certain viruses maybe circulating, and there's just like a weird one that it's like, if you get that one and then you take amoxicillin, like it's more prone potentially, but that's not validated. That's
It's so interesting.
Yeah. And then in terms of the weird, like allergic reaction type of symptoms, like it's one of those things where it moves around the body so quickly of with like where your rash is. Like I was saying, it moves really quickly. And like his swelling, it was like the ankles and then it was the face and then it was the hands and all this. And it moves. So it sort of seems like that was those instances were sort of it like moving to the throat and then reacting there. And then maybe, you know, then it like moves away. And so, but still like, you know, if you're, anyway, I mean, obviously that's like a dangerous place for it to be, impacting.
Yeah. Them. Yeah. Man, that's so scary. I can't even imagine. And I'm so glad that like he's doing well now, but like, how are you? Like, how were you during all of this? And like, obviously you and Nick too have like, you have Margo, you know, you're not just like having one kid where you can both like be together 24/7 and focusing on that. So like, yeah. How was it and how are like you doing with all of it?
Yeah. So Nick basically took the whole week off and was, you know, with Ollie. And of course I would, you know, we'd sort of take turns of who was like Ollie's caregiver, but like, you know, he really needed someone there. Like, I wouldn't say 24/7 cause he slept on his own a little bit, but you know, like someone like there was one night when, I slept right next to him and he would wake up and need water and then, you know, couldn't get it himself and stuff like that. But anyway, so yeah, we definitely tag teamed helping take care of him and Cass was helping out a lot of the week. So she, you know, she'd have Margo and we'd sort of be taking turns with Ollie and splitting things up. And like, you know, as the week started, I mean, I was going into this week, like supposed to have this really big week of training. It was like, all right, we're doing another big volume week. So it starts out and I'm just like, oh shoot. Like, I don't know how this is going to work. And so, you know, right away it was difficult, but it was still sort of possible to get in some of the training because, you know, Cass was helping out, Nick was with Ollie, so I could go and sneak into the garage and do like a quick workout. And it was hard because like, if I was working out, I was feeling guilt of like not being with Ollie and not, you know, helping Nick or whatever. But then if I like wasn't working out, obviously, you know, like I go into this week being like, this is going to be a big week. And I've been so consistent and doing so well. I was just like, oh my gosh, I am like, you know, just feeling really guilty from not training. And so it was, hard because you're in that place where of course it's like, it sounds so silly to like feel guilty about not training when something so much more important is going on. But it's also one of those things where, you know, if you're physically capable of training, so you're not sick, but even when you're sick, there's still that guilt. Cause it's like, you do all this work, you build up all this stuff, all this consistency. And then, I mean, if you can't train for like a week, like that's a big setback, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like not working for a week where like you pick it up when you get back, you know, it's your body is changing and you're, you know, like physiologically it's being impacted. So anyway, I trained through, you know, some of the week when I could sneak away, you know, reduce stuff significantly. And then, I mean, once he was in the hospital, it was just like, I didn't train any of those days because even though, you know, Nick was there all the time with him, you know, I wanted to be there and me and Margo would be there and we would like, because the doctors come in so infrequently or at different times, or then you're waiting for the next time he needs to take medicine and can I convince him to take medicine and all this stuff. And you want to talk to the different specialists. You never know when they're going to come. So that obviously was a lot. And then honestly, a huge part is the mental strain, right? There was one day when I had a workout and this was on Tuesday. So this was early in the week and I was doing these efforts and I was just like, wanted to cry. And I was like, I do not want to be doing this. Like this, I just like don't feel like I have the mental energy. And then I was like, oh yeah, what's the rule in Ironman? If you feel like really sad and depressed, if you don't feel good mentally, have some sugar and hopefully it makes you feel better. And so I went and I got a Coke and I drank it and I was like, okay, it actually did help. I got through my last set and like felt pretty good about it. So that was good. That did give me that little jolt, but that was the last hard effort workout I did. And I haven't done one since then yet. Like it takes mental energy to do hard.
Yeah. I was going to say, it sounds like it was just like a very mentally taxing week plus really. And, when you are so mentally taxed or sad or stressed or any of it, it's really hard to do the physical. Like, and sometimes you're not going to get the most out of yourself. And sometimes it's not going to, like, it still won't be beneficial in the way it would have been had it been that workout planned for just like a normal week in the life of Amy, right? And yeah, sometimes, totally. Yeah, you just have to pivot and stuff. But I think, though, this is one of those things where when you are like at one of your races or something, you can still look back on this week as an important part of your training because it's like going to contribute a lot to your mental toughness, you know? At least that's what I always try to do if I had like a week was like maybe didn't go as planned physically, but because of mental challenges or things, like it's still all – everything that happens to us in life still contributes to like the athlete we are too, I think. So
yeah. Yeah. And I also appreciated one thing my coach said when I was expressing my guilt was that, you know, I have been so consistent. Like I've been more consistent than ever been. I've just been doing a really good job at that. And so he's like, that's like, you earned, like, it's okay. Like you have a really good base. Like you did all this work. And so it makes it okay for these periods to come up because they will.
Yeah. Yeah. The money's still in the bank. You're still going to have a great year and a great season, I think. But I can imagine how difficult that was, balancing the guilt on both sides for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's so funny because you're like, oh, I'm not working on it. Then I feel guilty. And then I'm sitting here like taking 1 hour for myself when like someone's with him and things are okay. And I still feel guilty.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I'm glad that Ollie's doing better. I hope this does not happen again. I hope, you know.
Exactly. And that, because he's still like, it's still sort of a long recovery and there can be as they're like, tapering off of the medicine, the steroids and stuff, like can potentially be flare ups again. So just like fingers crossed that it like goes smoothly.
Yeah. We'll be hoping for that and keeping our fingers crossed and thinking of you guys. That sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
But
on the plus side, I told Ollie like his fun life back in me that he's like been in an ambulance.
I've never even been in an ambulance before. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Aw. Poor guy.
Yeah. Okay. But let's switch back to the most fun topic, which also has, I mean, it's difficult parts too. But Jen, let's talk more about your pregnancy. We have a whole trimester to catch up on.
That's true. I know. It's so crazy because like, we're only like a week and a half away or maybe 2 weeks away. I don't know, from me having known for like, 3 months already. So it's been a lot to catch up on. There's been times where I've been like tempted to say something on the podcast or like we've been talking about a topic and I'm like, I can't give the full color here that I now have because I can't reveal that I'm not revealing that I'm pregnant yet, you know?
Yeah. So yeah,
I'm excited to just have it out there.
Totally. Yeah. Have you been feeling like your second pregnancy is going like, or I mean, well, really your third pregnancy, but the, second one that you've made it to this point, are you feeling like it's going so much faster than your first pregnancy with Maddox?
I don't know because.
Okay.
I think I will feel that way in the end more like, oh my God, that flew by. But I don't know if I feel that quite yet. And it's kind of funny because I was actually messaging very briefly with a friend this morning who's 36 weeks pregnant. And when she had like her most recent appointment, her doctors made some sort of comment of like, I don't think we're going to expect you to go past 39. And then she was like, that's in 16 days. And she was like, oh my God. And so she was like freaking out, you know? I was like messaging her being like, I feel like it creeps along until it flies by, if that makes sense. So part of me, and I think too, having had the previous miscarriage, you're waiting so badly and like with so much anticipation to be like, let me just get to second trimester, that it does kind of feel slow at first.
Yeah.
But I do anticipate that it will feel like time's flying from here, especially with a toddler and just being busy. And like summer, I think, gives that feeling even more than like a winter does too.
True.
But I don't know. I'm basically having my pregnancies now timed very similarly. So, that's also my only experience, I guess, overall. But so far, not. But maybe I think that did have a lot to do, or has had a lot to do with like the first several weeks until I started having symptoms creep in. I just had so much anxiety, like I've never experienced in my whole life. Like a couple of times where I felt like debilitated almost. Like I felt like I couldn't work that day, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I remember telling you one time, like, oh, I thought I'd feel better. Maybe it was one of the days we were recording, I think, even. I feel like I remember thinking, like, oh, I thought I'd feel better waking up today knowing, like, I finally have an appointment tomorrow. But it actually just made that whole entire day, like, have so much anxiety into anticipation of that appointment that was the next day, you know? Like, even more so than I had over the weekend leading into that or something. So yeah, I remember because I had a previous miscarriage, they had me in initially at 6.5 weeks. And I remember telling my doctor, like, I would literally give anything to be nauseous right now. Like it would just ease my anxiety because I'd be like, that means my hormones are high. That means things are like happening the way they should. Even though I also knew that I didn't, really get nauseous or throw up for the first time with Maddox until like 8.5 or 9 weeks. So I had no reason to be like, I should be feeling this way right now.
Yeah.
But it was more like I hadn't yet experienced any symptoms when I had my miscarriage last summer. So I didn't like the feeling of being like, I don't really feel like I have symptoms right now, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, then I had that appointment at 6.5 weeks and they like not only could see baby, but they could see a heartbeat, which that was always already reassuring too, because when I was pregnant with Maddox, actually they couldn't really see something at my first appointment. They were having trouble and they were like, it's okay. Like sometimes you can't early on, like we're going to get you back in, you know, soon, you know, I don't remember if it was a week or week and a half or something. And then it was all fine. But I didn't have that much anxiety that first time because it was my first time being pregnant and I didn't have like a reason to know what to expect, to think anything would go wrong, you know, where this time I was like, yeah, just really nervous. But it was definitely reassuring. My anxiety did ease like up a lot after that, even though there's still that like creeping thought of like, well, I've had friends who've had perfectly fine appointments at 8 or 9 weeks and miscarry at 11 or 12 weeks. So like those thoughts creep in, but then you try to be like, but all I know so far is that it's going fine, you know, and trying to kind of balance that. And I can only imagine what that time could be like, or those thoughts could be like for people that already maybe struggle more with anxiety or with like intrusive thoughts, because I'm someone who's like naturally very optimistic and very much able to turn negative self-talk around quickly. And I was struggling, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, but you know, I mean, it was good news the whole time. And Devin would be like, there's no reason to think anything's wrong until they tell us. And I'm like, I know, it's just, it's hard. And I think it's different when you're the one like whose body is the vessel, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't want to say there's like a pressure, but like in a way there's a little bit of like pressure, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, totally. Yeah. That makes sense. And also like, I don't know. I mean, a lot of it is just the PTSD type of thing. Yes. Of like last time, you know, you probably felt like pretty good. And, you know, I mean, I don't really exactly remember your experience, but if you don't typically experience so much anxiety, you were probably going along with that pregnancy, like, oh, it's so good. And then suddenly it changes. So it feels scary to like do that again, or just like everything sort of reminds you. I know I've been dealing with that with this Ollie situation because, you know, he has been in the hospital as a kid, and just like everything is like, you know, just like it reminds me of those moments. Like even with this one, sorry, I'm like,
no, you're
talking about myself again, but you know, one example is like, we were supposed to be on a spring break trip right now. And the last time he was sick and in the hospital, we were supposed to be flying to Wisconsin for Christmas. Oh. And so in both cases, it was this feeling of like, is he going to get better in time? And even just having that thought again was like, just made me so sad, because it's like last time we had a trip and he was sick, and I was thinking that like it ended up really scary, you know? And so similar, just even whether the thought's good or bad, it just if it reminds you of something that was really an emotionally difficult time, it's hard.
Well, and like speaking of like the mom guilt, or the feelings of like, I don't know, having like multiple feelings at once that we've been talking about with so many of the topics today, it's like my anxiety is justified, but then you're like, am I going to feel bad if at like 20 weeks, I'm like, I should have just celebrated more in the beginning because it's all fine now. You know what I mean? Or like, you don't, I don't want to look back on this pregnancy as a bigger, scarier thing than Maddox's pregnancy, which was like largely just like positive or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And so then you struggle with like those feelings, but I just try to remind myself, like, it's all valid. It all like will come as it comes, and like, we'll move along. And you know, I had a follow-up at 8.5 weeks, which they considered the official, like, confirming the pregnancy appointment. And again, where it was able to see baby, see a heartbeat. At my OB, they say we don't listen to heartbeats till 12 weeks. So I was kind of like, okay, whatever, but sure. I guess we can see it. That's fine. And then, you know, that one went fine as well, as far as baby's fine. But I did have... Then I've had like, none of it's been crazy, but I've just had all these little things. So they're like monitoring me extra. They did tell me they were going to refer me to the high risk OB, which I had an appointment there, followed up with an appointment again with my regular OB at 12 weeks. And so it was interesting. So I go to my first prenatal appointment, so the 6.5 week one, and they're like, your blood pressure is high. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't normally have high blood pressure. I'm sure I'm just super nervous, you know? And I'm texting Whitney, of course, when the medical assistant leaves the room and I'm waiting for the OB to come in. This is just a theme in my life. If it's medical, I text Whitney. I'm like, my blood pressure is high. Yeah. And she was like, ask them to take it again at the end of the appointment. Let me know, whatever. And they said that too, like when she came back in, she's like, we're going to check it again at the end of the appointment. Well, so the interesting thing, oh, and I mentioned again to my OB, I never have high blood pressure. And she goes, well, you've had high blood pressure every time you've come to my office. And I was like, what? And I'm like, also, I pay attention to these things. So it's like really strange to me that's not sticking out in my memory, you know? Like I'm always like one teens over 70, like it's fine. It's perfect. It's great. And so I'm like, that's so weird. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I've seen my new primary here in Reno, both in December and January, and my blood pressure was fine at her office. And then I go, well, you know, my very first appointment with you was literally while I was still miscarrying. My second appointment with you was this fall, where I was like upset that I'm not pregnant yet, upset about my weight gain, upset about that I can't get into a normal doctor here for months still. And I'm starting to feel like something's wrong, right? Which ended up being, you know, my hypothyroidism diagnosis and all that. Like, so I was like, I was pretty upset then too. So I was like, I bet I just didn't acknowledge in my own mind. Like, I dismissed the blood pressure, knowing that, like, sometimes anxiety or being upset can, like, affect that. And because otherwise I was like, it's so weird that I wouldn't remember that, you know? So, and then I was like, and now I'm only 6.5 weeks pregnant. I miscarried at 7 weeks last summer. Like, of course, my blood pressure is high today, whatever. But then at the end of the appointment, Amy, the medical assistant does it again. It's high. And she goes, you know what? Let me try something. She changes the cuff to the larger cuff and my blood pressure is normal.
What?
Yes. And I text Whitney about this afterwards and she goes, yeah, if I'm coming into a room and someone's told me that the blood pressure is high, the first thing I always do is change the cuff to see if it makes a difference.
What?
And I was like, so interesting. And so the medical assistant had been like, remind me going forward, if you see me getting out, I can't remember right now which is which, the red versus black cuff. But she's like, if you see me getting out this one, remind me that we use this one on you or whatever. I just know it's the larger one. But the interesting thing is, like, when I go to the high risk OB, the second Devin and I walk in after we did our genetic counseling appointment on Zoom in their little office, then we go into the room with the medical assistant and she's going to do my blood pressure and all that, then take me to the room to wait for the ultrasound tech. The second I walk in, she's like, oh, let me switch it to the bigger cuff real quick. Like, she just sees me and goes, this is a tall woman, larger, whatever. Of course, I'm using the bigger cuff. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, why were they using a smaller cuff on me to begin with? I don't know. But because of all that, they made me get like a blood pressure monitor for at home. And I'm supposed to take it daily. And they wanted me to start baby aspirin for my whole pregnancy. And
this was before they realized that it was a cuff issue?
No, like even with realizing that. And so what turns out too is that my blood work, the protein in my urine or in my lab work, sorry, like I've done, they are having me do labs more often, partially because of thyroid, partially they were monitoring my HCG levels early on, partially some of the normal pregnancy labs, you know, normal pee in a cup. Well, each time I guess I've had some protein in my urine, which I never had the whole entire time I was pregnant with Maddox. And one other level in my lab work was slightly off too. And my doctor said, both of those are still things that are consistent with hypertension though. So high blood pressure. Yeah. So she was like, we're still marking this in your file. We're still marking it as a reason and as a thing that needs to be monitored. Like, we'll see, you know, basically.
Have you been doing it at home?
Not very often. But when I do, I've done it a few times. I definitely am not doing it every day. And it's been normal every single time I've done it. So I'm just personally not that worried about it at this point.
Yeah.
It was, you know, normal at maternal fetal medicine. It was normal at my follow-up with my OB's office the following day. So at 12 weeks. But when I met with the maternal fetal medicine doctor, I asked her, I was like, what's my reason? I was like, my mom and sisters were asking me and I was like, I don't even fully know. Like, what's my reason to be monitored by you all for this pregnancy? Because I was like, last time I had one appointment with maternal fetal medicine after my anatomy scan, when they thought they saw single umbilical artery, I had to go there to be confirmed. But I still ended up the rest of my pregnancy being monitored by my regular OB after the diagnosis was confirmed. And there was considered like no other issues happening with along with it or whatever. And I didn't know because like literally my referral sheet says like prior cesarean, interested in VBAC. It says, I'm going to roll my eyes major at this one, maternal obesity. So that's cool. It says like concerns for hypertension. It says like new diagnosis of hypothyroid. So I was like, what's the what are you monitoring me for in your mind? Why am I here? Whatever. And she was like, well, looking at everything that's here, it's mostly just the hypertension. So then I was talking to her about the cuff issue and how I've always had great blood pressure, blah, blah, blah. But that how apparently there were a couple numbers off in my labs. And she was like, well, those single instance like urine tests we've found really aren't that indicative of if there's actually protein in your urine. Like a 24-hour analysis is like way more going to give us way more of a picture and would be way more accurate because there's so many reasons you could have like a single time you go to the bathroom does have protein, but like generally you don't or something. Huh. So anyway,
this
they did
so
a 20.
Interesting.
Yes.
because I've never heard of even the concept of like protein in your urine being a thing that you look at until like Ollie was just in the hospital and they talked about it, you know, monitoring that at different times. So yeah. It's funny that it's coming up. Like, yeah, one pause to say, like, I love how you are like asking all these questions. You know so much. You're like trying to understand, you know, you look at the list, but it's like, okay, what are we really concerned about or looking at it? All of this, like, I think this is like our medical episode. Yeah. I think it's good.
Yeah. And this is like what I told my OB at some point with her, which did help her like understand me more. And I think help us understand each other more, is I told her like, I'm an information gatherer. So like, I'm not just, yes. You're not just going to be like, because I said so. And I'm going to be like, cool. Like, I'm going to do what you said because you said so, but I would like to know why. I would like to know, you know, the factor, like all, I would like to know all the things, but I'm very, you know, the athlete, I'm very coachable. I'll do what you tell me. I like the information along with that. So I was asking those questions of the high risk OB, and she was like, let me go look at what those numbers were in the couple, you know, urine tests you've had so far. And you might hear from us. I might want you to do a 24-hour urine analysis, depending on what I see. So did that, got called the next day. They want me to do one, go pick up the stuff, then do it the next day. You have to start it in the morning. So I had to wait till the next day to start, go drop it off on Friday. That, by the way, that week I drove there, and it's like North Reno as you're heading towards Truckee. It's like not close. I drove there four times that week. Cause then later on the day that I drop off my urine, I find out like 2 hours later, they're like, your gender results are in. And like, oh, I didn't want it in my lab work. I wanted to be able to pick up an envelope. So then I drive back there that day, which is like so funny. But to finish up the part about the protein in the urine and that whole thing, I got a call at the beginning of last week that they're referring me to nephrology, which I immediately Googled, and it's a kidney specialist. And I was curious what would happen because I saw my lab work that Sunday, I think, and they didn't call me till Tuesday. And I was like, or no, I ended up calling them. Yeah, I definitely called them. I gave them all of Monday. And then I was like, if they don't call me by noon on Tuesday, I'm going to call, because the lab works, that I've been able to see my lab work since Sunday. I can see that it says my protein's high. I can see that it says my creatinine clearance is high. So I can see that there's things that are out of reference range. And I was like, it might be that they're just like, yeah, we're going to have to continue to monitor you for hypertension. But I was like, I just don't know. And I allowed myself like a little bit of Googling. I do try to limit myself because I know, like, you know, you don't want to go down like crazy rabbit holes just for it to not be relevant at all or something. But in my like 7 minutes of Googling that I allowed myself, I had seen something that said, when your protein is high at the end of pregnancy, which I think a lot of people know. I knew that about when I was pregnant with Maddox. It just never was a factor for me, but that's when they can start watching you for preeclampsia. But I had seen something that said, when your protein is high in the first half of pregnancy, it's often indicative of a kidney issue that's not pregnancy related. And when I'd seen that, I was like, what? What? So I was like, what the heck? You know, I've never had kidney issues. Anyway, I call them midday Tuesday. They come back on the phone and are basically like, yes, we have a referral out to nephrology. And they say the same thing that I had found on Google, which is like, we don't know for sure what might be causing it or not, you know, but when your numbers are out of reference range at this level in the first half of pregnancy, it's usually indicative of a non-pregnancy related issue. So, you know, we need you to go see the kidney specialists. So I'm waiting right now on that. Yesterday had been like about a week or whatever since I'd heard from them, and they had told me to call if I hadn't gotten a call yet. So they gave me the direct line to the department at the hospital. They basically were like, my referral hadn't been processed yet. If I haven't heard by Wednesday.
So
I know. I'm so frustrated. If they told me, you know, today we're recording on Tuesday. I called yesterday on a Monday. They said, if I haven't heard again by Wednesday, call back. I know that referrals can take some time. I'm just really hoping that once they actually call me because I'm pregnant, they'll get me in, because I'm like,
right.
at this point, I have so many questions. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Could it affect my baby? Like, shouldn't we be figuring it out sooner rather than later? I'm not just someone who's walking around living with it can keep walking around living with whatever might be going on. And it might not be serious. Hopefully it's not. I just don't know. Like, I have another human life in me. So can we can we get this going? Can I please know what's happening and why these numbers are so off and like all of that. So all that to say, it's like, as far as I know, everything's fine with my pregnancy, but there's just like lots of little things, you know, we're monitoring my thyroid stuff. Now, apparently this issue, like, do I have hypertension? Do I not? Like, so it's just, again, nothing traumatic yet or crazy, but just like a lot of little factors where I'm like, oh, can I just get a couple smooth, like, can I get a smooth ride here? Can I get some chill weeks? But I just hope to get answers. I had told one of my girlfriends about it, who's also like a major Googler. And she actually found this like peer-reviewed medical article that specifically discussed how subclinical, not even regular, subclinical hypothyroidism, which is what I have, is a standalone, what was the phrasing? Is a standalone like factor for chronic kidney disease.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I was like, that's very interesting. Like, I'm not on the podcast right now saying, oh, I probably have chronic kidney disease.
No, but it's totally. Like, but okay. Yeah, super interesting.
Is there some sort of connection there? Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. So
this is exactly what I was thinking when you talked about being like a Googler, but then, you know, not wanting to, like if you take one little lab and then you Google, like, what could this be? Of course, you're going to find crazy stuff on Google. But if you, like, I found this so helpful, like going to the peer reviewed papers, there's so many good ones for like, or I shouldn't even say so many, like all you need is that one good one that like relates to, you know, for what Ollie was going through, the different potential diagnoses and how they are different and like all this good stuff. And it's like so satisfying.
Well, I just like the words. Totally. And I like that she found that article and sent it to me because even if I'm going to bring it up to the nephrologist, I'm going to be like, could this be a factor? Totally. And if they're like that, we don't think that's what's going on with you at all. I'll be like, okay. But like, I want to ask about it. Cause it's like, why not ask about it? Right. My prediction is that they will do another 24-hour urine analysis just because there's so many factors when you Google, like what could throw off your protein. Like if you did a really hard workout the day before, or if you were dehydrated, or if you were like, there's so many things where I think they're just not gonna take that one 24-hour. They're going to want to look again is my guess. And like maybe ultrasound in my kidneys. That's my, those are my predictions on what will take place when I see nephrology, but I have no actual idea. Those are just my guesses.
So, two questions I was thinking about. So one, how have your symptoms been lately? Like I know there was a period when you got excited because you started getting more of that like morning sick, you know, nausea type of stuff. Like what's sort of been the graph of symptom progression?
Yeah. It was right at around / just after my 8.5 week appointment where I did start to have more symptoms kick in, which was like the timing I told myself the whole time, even as I was trying to talk myself down from being anxious, right? It's like, you know, let's wait till 8 or 9 weeks. So overall, I've been throwing up much less than I threw up with Maddox. Like I didn't throw up every day and I wasn't throwing up like for the most part after meals or anything with him. But I threw up pretty often all the way till 17 weeks. But I remember like, but
to
I remember
me, once anyone says they threw up at all, I'm like, that's terrible.
That's horrible.
No, that is bad though.
But I remember having nausea and I remember thinking it was bad, but I also am just someone who hasn't like experienced much nausea in their life. Like I'm not really like a stomach, like that's not where my issues lie usually. But looking back, I think like my nausea with him was more in waves overall, but I did throw up more. This time, once it kicked in, I had like so much more consistent nausea. Like, and I mean, the grass is always greener, but like it got to the point where most days it would be like waves in the morning, but 2 p.m. would hit and all the way till bedtime, I'd just be so nauseous. And the reason I was saying grass is always greener, I like, there were times where I said, like, I feel like I'd rather throw up because I feel like I would feel relief if I did. And like, that was my experience pretty much with Maddox, was that it was more in waves and I was throwing up versus being nauseous for 8-9 hours, you know, at a time with no like relief. And the other reason I felt like that sucked was because, like I said, that 2 p.m. would hit and I would have so much trouble finishing out my work days. Like, because I'd just be sitting here feeling like crap. Like, I kept taking my computer in and sitting on the couch and being like, trying to do maybe until that point in my workday, really do my heavy contract drafting meetings, whatever I needed to do, and be like, save that time more for like emails or like minor edits to like tiny documents that people are sending me to look at or like things like that. Cause I just felt horrible. But it's been subsiding. It's not gone. Like, I had a day this weekend where it didn't start till later in the evening, but I felt pretty crappy all the way till I went to bed, probably starting around like 5. So it's definitely like easing up. But also, since I did throw up all the way till 17 weeks with Maddox, I've been like not necessarily expecting, like, I didn't, in my mind, second trimester wasn't a magic deadline of like, I'll feel so much better. It was more like, it might be 17 or 18 weeks along before I feel more truly that second trimester, like energy, less symptoms, whatever, right? So yeah, and I have thrown up, but just way less, like I think 4 times total. So
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Crazy.
Yeah.
And then, man, yeah. Like, one thing that gets really hard about complicated pregnancies, I know Allie struggled with this too, is, and like you said, sometimes you're driving really far, but so many doctor appointments.
Yes. Right?
And balancing that with work. And one question also, I mean, you know, Moms of Triathlon podcast, I am curious for any updates on, have you been able to do any exercising at all, you know? And totally makes sense if not, especially because of the added time of all the other things. But yeah, how have you been making that work with all the appointments? And then have you been able to do any exercising?
Yeah. So luckily my work is like super understanding, although it was like a little tricky because I didn't tell them at large until a couple, like, yeah, about a week ago. But my supervisor knew. And so I book my appointments when they're available. If I have options, I definitely will, if there's currently already meetings on the calendar, try to book them around that. But I just am like trying not to stress it. I did update, not the larger team, but my supervisor and her supervisor on like this referral I've gotten. Cause I'm like, I don't know what's going to come of this. Like, I don't know if I'm going to have any even more appointments or what, you know? So they're like, just keep us posted, like as much as possible, you know, block your calendar and like, give us a heads up. And I'm like, totally. So it has been a lot, like, especially certain weeks, it seems like, and cause apparently they are going to have me every time I go to high risk, I'm going to go to my OB that week too. So it's like, that's kind of interesting. Cause it's like automatically a double. Luckily I don't have to go to high risk at 16 weeks. I don't go back to my anatomy scan, but like I go to my OB at 16, then I do my anatomy scan at high risk. And then like the next day I go to my OB. So it's like, there is some of that going on. And of course we have like Max's first dentist appointment coming up, and then we have his 2.5 year checkup coming up. So I'm like, this is a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, luckily I balance it the best I can. Work is so busy right now, but my immediate supervisor is back off parental leave. So that is another body on like my little mini team within the larger legal team at least. But it's funny because, yeah, she came back and then I was pretty much like, yay, we're so excited you're back and I'm going to be leaving in 5 months. So, like, you know, so that's kind of funny. But that was her second kid and this will be ours. And I think that's what we each want. So, like, you know, our team shouldn't be impacted going forward. Our paralegal already has like 2 kids that are adults. So we should be good in that corner of the legal department. But yeah, it's just, yeah, it's been really busy. It feels stressful, but I'm just someone who always puts real life like ahead of work. Mm-hmm. I'm here to live. I'm not here to work. Like, work supplements my life. So it is what it is. And luckily I do work at a very understanding place. I'm very, very, very thankful for that. And then training wise, it's been kind of in waves, but I'm hoping now that symptoms are subsiding, I'm going to get more consistent. I have been walking, and I've been trying to be good about, like, the same thing I've kind of said all last year too, is like, even if I have 2 minutes, like even if I have 20 minutes, like, using my trusty Peloton app, like, I can find something to do, you know? So, but I did set a goal myself this week after we were coming back from the hectic week to try. I want to look at the Peloton app and try to make myself like a mini schedule and try to see if I can stick to that, like, over the next handful of weeks. Like, they have, first of all, they have so many, you can modify like a lot of stuff anyway, but they also have like prenatal specific strength classes, prenatal specific yoga, prenatal, like a lot of prenatal core, like all that. So that's cool. I like, you know, some of the lower body strength. I like some of the spin classes. I like bar. So I was kind of thinking this week, I'm going to try to put myself a little schedule, because I'm really good at if I have a routine too. So if it's like Monday, you're going to do bar minimum of 20 minutes. If work allows and you don't need to get manics and you have 40 minutes, I can pick a 30 minute class or a 40 minute class, you know? Then like Tuesday, maybe it's like a spin and then 10 minutes of prenatal core. And then Wednesday, like, I want to try to create a little thing for myself. So, and see if that helps me like stick to it. And then it's like handy, because I can always add on. Like, if I do a 30 minute something and then I'm like, oh, I feel good and I want to keep going, it's like I can pull up a 10 minute arms workout or whatever, you know, and add on to what I already did. So it hasn't been the most consistent. It was really hard when I felt so shitty. And because I realized the early mornings is when I was puking. If I got up earlier, those are the few times I've thrown up. But then the afternoons is when it was, and I pretty much needed to either work out before work or work out on the tail end of my workday before getting addicts. And then that's when I felt like I was going to, like, so nauseous, I was going to vom. Yeah. So then I was like, this isn't lining up well for me. And I was like getting frustrated. But I think, you know, going forward, that's my goal. So I'll report back, but I'm hoping to build a little bit more in. But I think walking is like key and very important. And it's a goal of mine to really do a lot of walking throughout the whole pregnancy.
Okay. And the final thing, you mentioned having an envelope with the gender. Did you guys do a gender reveal?
We did. I really wasn't expecting it to be ready that week. Like, I thought it was going to be the next week while I would be like gone at Chegg and all of that. So I had to like kind of figure it out last minute. And I was like, maybe we will just like open it. I don't know. But I called my parents and I was like, because they're in a little bit more of a rural spot. So I asked my mom, I was like, how reliable is the Amazon like estimates for like if it says something's going to arrive tomorrow, will it arrive tomorrow? You know? And she was like, it will. It usually does. And I was like, okay, cool. So I ordered like little like powder cannons from Amazon, and you know, it ships like, they're like wrapped in gold and it ships like two pink and two blue. They come with like little stickers on the bottom that you can, whoever you're going to have check the gender can peel those off and give you the right one or whatever. So I did that, and yeah, all of Saturday I was like waiting for them to arrive. And I was, originally it said, you know, delivered before 9 p.m. And I'm like, well, if they don't get here till it's dark out, we'll just wait till Sunday to do it.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah. We're getting more antsy just knowing like we technically just have it sitting in my backpack. Like, we could know already, you know? Yeah. But like, Pandora, long story short. Yeah. Long story short, they arrived like midday. The group had wanted to go to a winery, and wineries closed like at 5. And they'd been working on one of Devin's pieces of equipment all day. So we put it off till after that, because we were like, okay, well, we'll be back from the wineries like a couple hours before sunset. So plenty of time to do it all. So yeah, we got back, and I had my sister-in-law, Brittany, be the one who could like go check it out, get us the right cannons. I trusted her. I could totally see my brother like bringing us one of each and then us doing it and him being like, ha ha ha, here's the real one. And then being like, seriously, I still don't even know if I trust you or not. Oh, so I knew my sister-in-law, Brittany, would do it and do it right and everything. So we did that. And we just like picked a spot on the hill and we got my sisters who weren't there on FaceTime and Devin's family on FaceTime. Oh, and then one of my best friends, otherwise like kept it, you know, just to that little group. And we popped the cannons and I was like so excited. And like my brother was doing a video. But the funny story is like, I can laugh about it now, but Amy, in the moment, it felt a little bit like a gender reveal gone wrong. Not gonna lie. I texted you and Allie about it, but Devin like took a step back but then faced it at me thinking this will be fun. Jen will be showered in whatever color it is.
Right.
Like, and
logic.
Yes. And I didn't know in the moment that he took a step back. So anyways, what ended up happening is it felt like his cannon literally was like an inch from my cheek and like went off. And this video will not see the light of day because I get so mad. But, not even mad isn't the right word. Like sad. Like I instantly go from like, oh my God, pink. Like, and in my head that happened for like half a second. Like for half a second, I was like, oh my God, it's pink.
Which it only happened for half a second right now because you.
So yeah.
First of all, it was pink.
It was pink. I were having a girl. Sorry. Yes. Okay. So it's pink. And then I just feel this like boom in my face. My mouth is like full of powder instantly. And I look at Devin apparently and I say, like, why would you do that to me? But. And he felt really bad. He's like, I didn't know. And like, cause it felt like I got like slapped or punched. Like until I watched the video, which was not for like another 10 or 15 minutes, thought he had like taken a step towards me and done it. Cause it literally felt like it went off right at my face. But I'm sure we'll share it. Not the video, but my brother was able to go through the video and capture this still that is like totally perfect, totally golden, does have my reaction, even though I like barely remember reacting, you know. To the gender part of it all. But we're having a daughter and we're so excited. Yay. We always said like, if we had the ability to choose, we'd love one of each. And like, that's exactly what's happening. So we're like very thrilled about it.
Yay. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So good. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And what's crazy is since January, like since probably about a week and a half to 2 weeks after we told Maddox and like started explaining to him, there's a baby in mama's belly. We'd ask him like, do you want it to be a boy or a girl? Do you want a brother or sister? He has been saying sister the entire time.
Oh.
So it was so funny because we do the gender reveal and then I was like, Maddox, you're right. You're having a sister. And he was just like, yeah. Like he was like, I've literally been telling you this for 2 months, mom. Like,
oh my God,
I'm not surprised here, but it was so cute. And now he's gone from saying like, there's a baby in mama's belly to there's sister in mama's belly, which is like really sweet. So,
so sweet. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we're excited to continue to talk about your pregnancy journey throughout and continue to get updates. But yeah, this is super fun. I'm so glad that we get to share with everyone. And yeah.
Me too. Congrats. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Now for our closing segment, our Go Mamas of the Week.
Go Mama.
Go Mama. Go Mama.
Go Mama.
These can be any small triumph or thing that's making us happy. Jen, what is your positive this week?
Yeah, so we've been like a little off with Maddox's bedtime between him getting sick and us where we were at my parents. We didn't have like a separate place for him to sleep. So he was like sleeping with us and he's just gotten into this mode where he's been asking like, even like crying for like sleep in mama's bed, like every night. And a lot of nights Devin successfully like transfers him to his own bed. So it's like not the end of the world. And we haven't been feeling like dealing with the whole, like battle of getting him down. But on the rare occasions where Devin isn't able to successfully transfer him, I just don't sleep well then. So it was like, it's time to get it going again. It's time to like work on our routine again. And so last night I was just like, we're doing it. This is what's happening. And it went really well. And I just think it's a go mama because it's like the battle of like, do I not battle bedtime so that he's easy to put down and I have like an easier evening, but then I'm not like doing what's best for me to get my most optimal sleep. So it was like a go mama because it actually ended up not being that bad last night. And I then got really good sleep, which were both very much needed. But I will say there was like a tiny bit of bribery involved. We told him if he slept in his own bed, he could get a new race car. A few weeks ago at Safeway, they had like a $4 for $5 Hot Wheels. So I just bought them, but I hadn't given them to Maddox yet. So I told him like last night, like if you sleep in your own bed, you can get a new race car in the morning. And he was like kind of into it. Partway through reading our books, he looks up at me and he goes, I get new race car. And I'm like, if you sleep in your own bed tonight, you do. And then the funny thing was when we finished our third book, I go, okay, Max, it's time to go to bed. He goes, I sleep in mama's bed. And I was like, don't you want a new race car? And he was like, no. But I ended up just being like, we'll snuggle for 5 minutes. Then I'll sit by your bed for 2. And then mama's going to leave the room, but you're going to sleep in your own bed tonight. And he did. And he slept the whole night. And I slept great. So I feel good about it.
Yay. That's awesome.
And first thing out of his mouth this morning was, I get new race car. And I was like, yeah, let's go. Let me go grab your new race car.
Nice.
But yeah. Amy, what is your go mama this week?
So I love all things spring and flowers and all this stuff. And so, you know, in Portland, we have amazing cherry blossoms, and the most famous, wonderful ones, I would say, are the ones along the riverfront. And so there's this whole like pathway with cherry blossoms. But of course, the thing about cherry blossoms is that it's a very short peak window of when they bloom and when they look amazing. And then that whole area is just like packed with people taking photos and loving it. And then it just, you know, the next day is almost done, you know, the petals, like half the petals fall off and it's totally, you missed your window. And so, but it always changes every year, like depending on the, you know, the weather and stuff. And so I'd started to like, there was a photo posted and I was like, oh no, it's like peak cherry blossom time. Like we need to get there really quickly. And of course, Ollie was sick all last week. And so I'd been planning like, on Friday, I was going to take Margo and we were going to go get cherry blossom photos. And I was excited and like, not going to delay, try to get there. And then of course that was the day Ollie ended up being in the ER and then being admitted to the hospital. And so we couldn't go on Friday. And then I was like, okay, maybe I'll go Saturday when we, you know, cause like we don't need, Margo doesn't have to sit in the hospital all day with Ollie. So I'll take a break and go down there. But then it just ended up that like we did stay at the hospital all day except for going home to get some stuff for them. By Sunday, I drove by and I was like, oh no, like I think
the trees are bare.
And so I was like really disappointed. And I just kept telling myself like, okay, this is just, they'll be here next year and this is why they're so beautiful. And, you know, it's like, this is just the message of like, for one, like seize the day and like, you know, like you never can count on whatever thing because this was an unexpected thing that came up. And so it's just like a reminder of like, appreciate life every day, whatever. Like I'm trying to get all like deep about it to like make myself feel better that like we missed it again. I feel like I miss it every year too because it just, you know, it's hard to get there at the right time.
Yeah.
And of course, I'd been telling Margo all weekend, like, we're going to go see the cherry blossoms today. And I'm like, we didn't go and didn't go and didn't go. So then finally on Sunday, Ollie got discharged from the hospital and it was the afternoon. And it was probably like 4. And we were driving home And on the drive home, like a block from our house, I saw this cherry blossom that looked pretty good. I was like, okay, like most of its petals haven't fallen. It still is like nice, bright pink, like not that, like they sort of become red when the petals have fallen and it's whatever's left. And so I was like, Margo, let's take your scooter. Let's go down the block and we'll go see the cherry blossom. And we did that and we like took the scooter over there and we saw this one and then she wanted to do this loop and we went up the hill and we saw a bunch more and it was aww, like really special because like they're near our house. We explored a place we've never been. We got to see the cherry blossoms. We like, you know, I was just one of those things where it's like, yeah, you never know like what opportunity will present itself. And we're up on the hill at like, you know, we're above like 500 feet of elevation, whereas the river is probably like zero, right?
Right.
Something like that. So I think that impacts it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
it was like a little bright spot in a really rough yeah, week that you thought you had missed out on even having like that little bright spot, but then you got it.
Yeah. And I got that special time with Margo that she wanted. Cause we'd been talking yeah, about the cherry, like I trained her basically when we would drive past cherry blossoms, we'd be like, oh, the cherry blossoms, they're so pretty. And I kept being like, we're going to go see some. And then we didn't. So yeah, it was a really nice way to end our weekend and
yeah,
something special for Margo. You know, it's hard when you're all focused on the other sibling, you know, at yeah, times, but yeah, yeah. So that was a really, really nice, nice thing.
I love it. Well, that is it for our show this week. Thanks for listening. We are excited to continue to share our experiences of training through pregnancy, postpartum, and with young kids. New episodes come out every other Friday. And if you have any topics you want us to cover or any questions for us, find us on Instagram at @momsoftriathlon or email us at momsoftriathlon@gmail.com. And so, oh my God, Amy, nephrology is literally calling me right now.
Oh, okay.
I have to take this. I'm so sorry.
Of course.